Hey everyone, and welcome back to The Perspective, a show where we tackle paranormal and supernatural claims, belief in aliens, conspiracy theories, and pretty much any political claim you want to bring to the table. My name's Ethan, and your hosts for the evening are Jim Burrows and Bree. Jim, how you doing?
Not too bad. Doing pretty good. Finally got cool here in Texas, so it was kind of a nice day out. So
nice. When you say cool, how cool is cool?
High 80s, low 90s.
Oh, that's cool.
Yes.
Dude, that's actually like my ideal weather, although I kind of prefer the high 90s.
Yeah, I spent 20 years in Arizona, so my temperature gauge is a wee bit on the broken side. So anything below 80, it's time to get the parka out and the snowshoes and prepare for frigid weather.
Well, humidity plays a big part of that too. Whether 80 degrees feels hot or cold or cool or...
Yeah, without a doubt. Humidity is a huge bit, and spending, so much time in Phoenix, I'm not used to the humidity, but the heat's just right. It's 90 out. Who cares? It's the humidity that'll kill you. So,
right.
Rainbook, how about you? How you doing?
I am doing well. I've had a tumultuous last month or so, starting my transition towards womanhood and been busy with a lot of changes in my work and personal life. So it's been a crazy time. I'm glad to be back though. It's been a while.
I'm glad to have you back. So we do have a few callers. So the caller's on hold right now. The call screener will get to you in just a moment. But we do have our first caller, Jim. Brian, are you ready to jump in?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. I'm going to jump off screen. Wow. I'm losing my voice. I'm going to jump off screen. Your first caller is going to be Mark, and he wants to talk from Mississippi, wants to talk about how solar eclipses are used to cover for UFOs. Mark, you're on with Jim and Bree.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Hey, Mark. Not too bad. So how does this work?
All I can say is they had a solar eclipse a while back, 2 years ago, and they said that the eclipse was coming from west to east, which don't happen. I took some pictures with my phone, didn't really look at them for, a few months, and then I zoomed in on one, and it had a triangular object where the sun was. It didn't eclipse the sun, but it was triangular and had three circles on each corner, kind of like that government supposedly UFO they built or some UFOs that people have seen before, and I just thought it was quite odd. I've had many other experiences with different stuff like that.
Right, but how does the solar eclipse cover? Because we know how they happen, we know when they happen, we predict them with an astonishing degree of accuracy. They just don't happen at random. So how do they cover for this object you say you have a photograph of?
Like I said, maybe it was taking some kind of surveillance type stuff going on. I mean, it didn't eclipse the whole sun, but it was in there, and I don't know. Maybe they was just maybe whoever was in the craft was using the solar eclipse as a kind of like cover.
Now, when you say cover up, are you meaning that the eclipse itself was faked in order to cover up this UFO sighting, or do you mean that they used the UFO or they used the eclipse as a cover to do something with the UFO?
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, the last one.
Okay, so the eclipse was real. Then we accept the eclipse was real. It's that they were using it to cover up a UFO. That's where they were using the eclipse to launch a UFO, to land a UFO, something along those lines.
I'm thinking more like some kind of surveillance type thing. I don't know exactly the size of the UFO because how far the picture, you have to zoom out or anything, but So it has to have been quite large.
Do you think so? Do you think it's man-made? And if so, is it better to call it a satellite than a UFO if it's just an unmanned surveillance vehicle?
I wouldn't call it. I don't know if it's man-made or not, but I ain't never seen nothing like it. I've seen pictures like, you know, YouTube and stuff like that of similar craft, you know, some supposedly, you know, reverse engineered by our government, you know, in the black, you know, budget, and then some that they don't know how to explain.
But how do you know that how do you know it's not just an artifact of the lens or an artifact how do you know that triangular craft don't exactly fly very well unless they're a drone of some kind? I mean, these things are all fairly obvious. And if you have to zoom in on it quite a bit, how do you know it's not just an artifact of zooming in too far?
I would like to think that because of you can see the circles on the corners, and it, you know, against the black triangular background, that it wasn't something like some kind of optical illusion.
So are there lights?
Yeah.
Are you seeing lights on this craft in your image that you have, or is it?
You can make them out. It is not like they're shining, but you can make out the circles on each corner.
So there's a circle light at each corner. So there's a circled light at each corner. Are there any, are they colored? Is there any red, any blue?
No, they kind of look like a light red, maybe. I posted it to the webpage Aliens, plus another one, which I think's a drone, really, you know, of some kind. Maybe, probably not ours, but I seen a video of it, and it was moving, and the person that took the photograph disappeared permanently, I guess.
Yeah, I'm hearkening back to what Jim was saying about drones, because it's not uncommon for them to have different light arrangements and LEDs on them.
If you're talking about like the triangles type things, like say for the Phoenix Lights and 1997?
Yeah,
I mean, we know what those were. We know what those were, right? They were flares being dropped over a military ranch.
I tend to disagree with you on that.
Yeah, I was in Phoenix for all that, and quite frankly, what people were claiming was laughable. They were taking several people took, you know, shots with their cell phones and were claiming they could do X-ray and IR analysis off of a cell phone, and it's just complete total utter bullshit. You need a camera capable of seeing into the IR, and phone cameras aren't, certainly not 1997 and not today either. Most of these things have been thoroughly debunked. If you don't know what you saw, it's quite correct to call it a UFO. But to make any conclusions about it, I don't see how you can make any conclusions about something that you did not apparently clearly see or get a good enough picture that, I mean, when you blow it up, is the picture starting to pixelate at that point? Are you blowing it up that far? What kind of camera did you use? What was the megapixel rating on it?
Yeah, the light's a single pixel. There's a lot of variabilities. I kind of wish we had the picture to look at. That would that maybe add another layer to this to be able to explore your photograph and try to come to a better understanding of what you're looking at.
Yeah.
All right. You said you had some. Was there anything maybe a little bit more compelling you'd like to share before we move on?
No, not really, unless you want to get into, you know, paranormal type stuff or something like that.
Oh, well, we love paranormal stuff, but right now we do have some other calls holding, and that'd be a whole new topic. So definitely enjoyed talking to you tonight. I don't know that I'm convinced about the photos of the triangles, but it's interesting.
Yeah.
So when's y'all's next podcast?
We're here pretty much every Tuesday. Same time.
Tuesday. And what time? Mm-hmm. What time y'all start?
7 Central is our start time.
7 Central. Okay. Yep.
Jim, did you have anything in closing? Okay.
Pardon me.
I was just checking with my co-host here.
It was nice talking to y'all. Y'all have a great day.
All right. You too.
All right. Let me clear my throat. Whatever Ethan had, he gave it to me. Yeah. All right. who do we got next? Let's see here. We have in the screening room. Now we got Joe from Virginia. We got Cassie from Colorado. And we have A Radio from Pennsylvania. Looks like A Radio is first in line. Message from the Holy Spirit about aliens.
Okay.
You want to tackle that one?
Yeah, let's have some fun.
Yeah. A Radio, you are on with Bree and Jim. Said you got
Hi.
Some.
Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. All right.
Okay.
You said you had some information, a message from the Holy Spirit about aliens. We'd love to hear about it.
Yes. So I have an 11-page letter that I wrote in regards to a quote-unquote secret document signed by Anunnaki, Pope Benedetto, XVI, and Amatok Stanford, who is a quote-unquote human-alien hybrid.
Okay. No. And how do you know that this document exists, and how do you know the signatures are real?
Because I backtracked it and traced it due to where it is located, and it is cross-checkable with whatever is written in religions and, you know, the media and all of that.
But so you can, you've had a handwriting analyst analyze these signatures, because you mentioned two fairly famous people who have signed quite a few documents. It should be fairly easy to validate that the signatures are real.
Yeah. And on the website that it comes from, which I don't think you may have heard of it, it's called, I can barely pronounce it, bibliotechlafields.net. But when you go back and it links all of the documents that each person has ever presented. And it was important because Benedetto is one of the only popes who have acknowledged the wrongdoings of churches and the Vatican themselves, which is why he was made to step down when he was in papacy.
Benedetto, you mean Benedict the 16th?
Yep.
Okay. And so, but who is the handwriting expert that validated that this signature was his?
It isn't verified, but it provides everything that he's signed when you go back to it.
Yeah, so this is the problem with signatures is that people can fake them, and a handwriting expert should be able to detect most of the ways that these were faked. So just because you have a signature doesn't mean the signature is real. And if the letter just has stuff that is easily verifiable from common newspaper records and other things, then that doesn't go to prove necessarily anything. Because anybody can read the sources and put together a story from them however they want to.
And I think that a lot of this linking with Benedict the 16th and aliens comes from that it's been a couple of years back, there was the astronomer for the Vatican that said that maybe alien life existed, and the Pope, you know, supports his astronomer. Then now you have a Pope that's saying that alien life might exist. And from there, this is not a far leap for things to kind of tumble forward and to become this narrative that the Pope is believes in, or even is associated with or protecting knowledge about aliens.
Right.
But I don't see anything substantial. This letter sounds intriguing. I don't know if it'd be compelling, but.
Yeah. And honestly, I mean, I don't really care that Pope Benedict or any Pope signed anything, because I don't think they have any special connection to anything other than possibly their own delusions, depending on how strong a believer they are, because I don't accept the claim that that God exists. So I see no reason to accept that Benedict is anything more than a guy who runs around the Vatican in fancy clothes that he could probably sell for a pretty penny to go feed some poor. So I don't know why we care that he signed anything or that he thinks or doesn't think aliens exist. He's certainly not a cosmologist. He's not a biologist. He's not he doesn't study any of this stuff. So I don't know why we care what he thinks.
So A Radio, are you Catholic? Is that why you're putting stock in?
No. More,
okay.
Do
you trust what the Pope would say?
Well, this isn't about religion. This is what the people who rule our planet have turned religion into, which is the complete opposite of what it's meant to be, which is spirituality.
So the people that rule our planet, is this like an Illuminati like idea?
Yes.
Okay. So
yes, essentially.
What evidence do we have for the Illuminati?
They put their symbolism everywhere. They flaunt it into public eyes because they're proud of the horrible things they do, which there is plenty of proof of. And it's important to note that the Vatican owns a space telescope that they named Lucifer. That is their telescope.
Why would the Vatican name anything, much less a space telescope, Lucifer? That makes no sense.
Well, I can find symbology in the pictures in your background there, Jim. I can see pyramid. I can see numbers. There's numbers on the post behind you. It's easy to infer a lot of.
Oh yeah, I mean there is symbology that is popularized by a number of people, and then it gets taken by the general public and people start using it everywhere as things fall in and out of fashion. So yeah, that symbology doesn't necessarily mean anything. But going back to this letter, so we had three people. We have Pope. He's not really interesting in terms of him saying anything about aliens. And then you said you had a half human, half alien hybrid. Has there been a DNA swab taken? How do you know he's a half alien, half human?
This is just confirmed from all of the proof that they provide on their website.
All of the proof they okay. I can create a website that can prove almost anything in just a couple of hours if I really want to.
Remember the Blair Witch Project? And they created a website, created a whole disappearing hikers and everything.
Exactly. I mean, just because it's on a website doesn't mean it's real. And just because they're producing quotes on there from supposed scientific papers, unless you go and track those papers down, I don't know that you can trust any of it. So what does the website offer as evidence other than itself?
It provides a complete history of quite literally everything, has been pushed to the public.
So that's nice. How do you know any of it's real? How do you know any of it's true?
Because I've seen what they have shown on there happen in front of me.
For example?
having alien contact.
You've had alien. Okay, so what was that like?
Well, first you need to be able to accept them to such a degree that you are capable of loving them with a parent's love. The reason they don't show themselves is because they're afraid.
In order to see them, you have to believe in them first.
Yes.
Okay. There seems to be a problem with your logic there. Because the time to believe something is when you have sufficient good evidence to do so and not before. And if you start believing in things that you don't have sufficient good evidence for, then you can believe in things that don't exist. And given the power of the mind, you can believe in, you can make yourself believe you've had encounters and conversations that you haven't had. This is not anything new to science. So do you have any other evidence other than your own personal experience that these things are real?
I don't have a good camera, but there was only two times where I caught footage of the ships, which appear as balls of energy when you zoom in on them, and they look like those glass electric balls that you put your hand on and the electricity is shooting out constantly.
Okay.
She's talking about an electrode.
I'm just trying to think of the name of it. they're kind of cool.
So you're seeing that in images, the pictures that you've taken?
Yes.
Go ahead, Jim.
No, go ahead.
How would you differentiate something like that? Because an electrode looks very much like lightning. So how would you differentiate what you're seeing from just regular lightning?
Well, these show up as quote unquote stars. But when you fully acknowledge and embrace them and ask them questions, they will respond to you accordingly by answering yes or no questions, typically by moving side to side. And so that they don't shake up the ship, they go in a circle for yes.
Okay. So do you have any video evidence of them doing this to your questions? Or is your video evidence...
I only have video of them just being stationary.
Okay.
I just ordered a new phone for this purpose. It should be here in a few days.
Right. So how did you, what you're describing sounds like to me, ball lightning, which is a fairly well-known and understood weather phenomenon. So the fact that they're doing some sort of response, sounds interesting, but you know, you're going to need something a little bit more than just the video evidence as well. That's a good start. But again, there are ways to fake that you could be accused of. So what is your plan to head off critics like myself and skeptics like myself to say that it's you moving the camera and not them or some other trickery that may be going on in there? I mean, there's a number of ways we could fake this, right?
Well,
it could be like an idiomotor effect.
I understand why you're doubting it. I don't blame you. And the reason, you know, I'm ordering a phone so that I can be able to record this. And what differentiates these from regular stars is the fact that they are capable of, from when I have talked to them, they will run entire laps around my entire house. They will clearly move across the sky. They don't move a little. They move very clearly and silently.
Are you in an urban area or are you in a more rural area?
I actually am directly next to an airport.
Well, I mean, that brings up all sorts of interesting things because... you should have a number of people who've seen these as well, possibly showing up on radar. You know, you should have pilots reporting this. And so if you tell me, you know, you can go on online and get the ATC audio for, I don't know how far back they go, but their online records of ATC audio talking to pilots. So if you tell me what airport you're at, I can go and what days this happened, I can go find out very quickly if anybody was reporting anything like what you saw. And I'm pretty willing to bet that I'm not going to, right?
And then there maybe have cameras too, because I know a lot of the airports will have cameras facing, you know, every which way to help document things coming in and out of the airport. So,
yeah, I mean, the surveillance is
I'm sorry.
Yeah. The surveillance on those things is impressive on an airport is fairly impressive, but you have eyewitnesses and you have people looking out for things flying. So what airport are you near? Cause we can, I mean, I'm not going to do it now online cause it would take too long, but you could pull those audio tracks, for the times that you saw them and see if anybody else was reporting the same thing.
Yeah. And the funny thing is every time that I'm speaking to them directly and making them interact, they always send out planes to investigate. And when the planes fly behind them, you can clearly see that whatever this ball of energy is in front of the plane, as in it's low in the atmosphere.
So yeah, if there's planes flying in to investigate this and they're near an airport, there would definitely be audio records of that.
ATC is talking to whoever's up there flying around there, and it's probably Air Force fighter craft, so the Air Force will also have records of any of that. It would not be hard to ask the Air Force whether they've been flying F-15s or 16s, which would be the two most likely aircraft. If you're near a naval post, it might be 14s or F-8. I mean, everything that you're talking about is you can get the documentation for fairly easily. Like I said, the ATC audio is online. There are a number of YouTube channels who, you know, will post some of the more interesting ATC chatter, whether it's an incident in the air or just something funny that happens. So you should be able to go and find all that evidence.
I think it was important to mention this, that I believe it was 5 days ago when I was seeing what I refer to as the mothership. They sent out 3 military black triangles, and they have like a really bright green light going across the entire bottom. And then there's like 3 red lights on the top of it, but they're like really pointy and pure black. I don't know what to call them.
They don't sound like any aircraft from the Air Force inventory I'm aware of. When people say triangular, one of the things that comes to mind is of course, the B-2, quite possibly an F-117. The F-16's got wings that could be described as triangular, but not that. The lighting scheme that you're describing makes absolutely no sense whatsoever for a black dot military aircraft. So how do you know they're U.S. Air Force at all?
I don't.
Okay.
Like I just said, I don't know what to call them.
Okay.
And I don't think that it was our Air Force now, just because they were dead silent.
Well, so the B-1B is actually pretty silent until it gets far enough past you that the sound catches up. I know that from personal experience, from watching a B-1 during the B-1 when the B-1 is being bedded down at Dyess Air Force Base. My dad was stationed there and I was a lifeguard at the pool and was standing outside, and the B-1B sounded completely silent until we felt it. The low rumble is well after it had passed. The F-15s and 16s flying fast enough can also appear to be that if they're too far away. So I don't know that silent necessarily means anything, depending on how far away they were. But again, if you're near an airport and things are flying around, someone is going to notice, because you've got, you know, depending on your airport, pilots in the air are looking to not collide with other things in the air. So you should definitely be getting some reports from that. Mm-hmm. And so the fact is, whenever somebody starts reporting these things, we don't see a lot of ATC traffic. We don't hear a lot of pilots describing stuff in busier areas like anything you're describing. Because like I said, mm-hmm. there are ATC channels who publishes stuff as their content of incidents happening in the air, everything from engines catching fire to unruly passengers to funny exchanges between the controller and a pilot. So somebody would have caught it, put it on there, and it would have made mm-hmm. it somewhere. And it just hasn't happened yet. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I tend to be fairly skeptical. Just because airports are really well monitored for things that are flying.
And the thing is, with that, wherever I personally travel, whether it's during the day or night, these chips that I look at and speak to follow me constantly. And with them, the same drones that come from the airport follow with them.
Not to get too personal, but have you had your the vision checks? Because if you're hitting lots of bright lights in your vision when it's dark out, that there may be something to that. And again, not to get too personal with you, but you're saying like this follows you like when you're going to the grocery store. Or are you saying it follows you if you travel, like you go stay at the beach for a couple of weeks and you start seeing them there? Is that?
Well, they're always directly hovering over where I am at any given time. And the quote-unquote stars that they cloak themselves as, usually, until they don't, show up as different shapes of triangles with very specific shapes to them. And the UFO that did uncloak itself to me is the same exact UFO that is shown in a cave painting that I have.
Well, this is all, you know, very interesting claims that we have here. Unfortunately, with so many different situations that we would expect to see more evidence from, it's really hard to except that this is something that's happened in the physical world, at least. I'm not claiming that you're not experiencing this. I'm just not sure that if someone was standing there with you, that they would be experiencing this it the same way that you were. But the idea that this is happening near an airport, where there's like Jim went over so much surveillance, so much communication, because they have to. There's mm-hmm. you know, thousands of pounds of steel flying around in the sky. They have to be vigilant. So I'm just not sure that I find this these sightings compelling. But I do appreciate you calling it and sharing.
With you know, the planes that do go and view them, I've literally seen their energies bounce out of the way as the planes try to like fly into them, it looks like. And like I said, 4 or 5 nights ago with these mystery black triangles that were silent, they couldn't have been more than 200 feet above the tallest trees, which are only like 60 feet here.
Okay. Well, we can leave that as the last word on this, unless Jim had anything else he wanted to say about the topic. I think we might have, you're muted, Jim.
What is going on?
There you go. Okay. You're back.
Yeah. I don't have anything else to add.
All right. Well, thank you, A-Radio. We are going to move on to our next caller. You have a pleasant evening. I think that next we are going to talk to Joe, kind of mix things up, because Joe, what would be evidence for the existence of God is what we have on the call here. So let's bring him on. Hey, Joe, you're on with Bree and Jim. Good to talk to you.
Hey, Bree. Hey, Jim. How are you guys?
Yeah, not too bad.
All right.
Yeah, I've never talked to you, Brie, or Jim. I've called some of the ATS shows before, but
okay.
Yeah, so that was my question.
What would be good evidence?
Well, yeah,
that's your question. So here's the problem with that. I don't know what would be good evidence until I see it. But the quality of evidence, given the unusualness of the claim, needs to be extraordinary, right? You have an extraordinary claim. If your God claim is that he's the triomni God, that is really extraordinary, and I really need to see really extraordinary evidence for that, right? If you're going to claim that it's the God of the Bible makes specific claims that can be tested, and every time they're tested, they're failed. Specifically, that where two or more are gathered in my name, when they pray, it'll happen, or whatever the exact quote is. We know that fails nearly every time it's tried. And so that's a test that fails. So whatever evidence you're going to need, it's going to have to be extraordinary, which we have not seen. It's going to need to be measurable. I mean, it's going to have to meet the scientific criteria. It can't be Uri Geller trying to bend spoons with his mind when he's really bending it with his fingers type stuff. So I can't specify exactly what type of evidence would take to convince me, simply because all the evidence I've seen so far that has been presented to me has failed.
Okay. How about you, Brie?
Okay, so it is going to be very subjective to what kind of God you're talking about. If you're talking about a creator God or a deistic God, a deistic God's going to be much easier to give me basically a framework to say, yeah, that's a possibility, because obviously it's something that long ago, far away, that doesn't interact with us. But this, it's claims about a personal God that really is where I want to see the evidence. That's where I want to see, if you're claiming that there's a God that you are interacting with who's omniscient, then you should be able to present a case to show omniscience of your deity, just by correlation, because your deity that you're interacting with, because it's a personal deity, should be able to provide you with the evidence that you need to convince anyone. That's the fact that apologetics exist is kind of evidence that that's not the case.
Yeah.
Okay. I was just saying, like, not something that you're interacting with. I'm just trying to figure out, like, if God exists, if there's a mind behind the universe.
Oh, well, there's three of us on this call. What's your position on that? What's the evidence that would convince you?
Yeah, I believe God exists. I believe a lot of the arguments lead to God's existence.
Okay.
Which arguments?
Which evidence convinced you?
I like the argument from contingency. That's my favorite argument, which...
Right. Well, Jim's gone into a little bit of a buffer, but let's continue. So, argument from contingency. Can you go ahead and lay that out for me, what your understanding of the argument of contingency is?
Okay. I don't have it right in front of me or anything, but it's you know what contingent means, right?
Yeah. One piece depends on the other piece.
Something's existence is caused by something else, or relies on something else, you know. It needs something else for its own existence.
I'm having a little bit of trouble hearing you. Are you able to increase the volume any?
Yeah, let me do it again. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Real quick. Sorry, Joe. It sounds like you're on speakerphone. Could you take it off speaker?
Sure. Let me see. How do I do that? Yeah. Can you hear me now?
There we go. Much better. I don't know where Jim went. I'll step in until Jim comes back.
Yeah,
sorry.
Jim had some internet issues. He should be back shortly. But yeah, so when you're talking about contingency, it's this moves back to what like a prime mover argument, right?
Yeah. Okay. I'll like kind of make up my own something that's contingent is something that, you know, its existence is it's not self-existence. It's existence is caused by something else. You know, it needs something else for its own existence. So that's what contingent means.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Every being is contingent on whatever created it. I'm familiar with the argument, but so how do you find that compelling? Like, how do you stop at a deity and say everything's contingent but this? What stops you there?
Okay. Well.
Joe,
did we lose you?
It looks like we just lost Joe. Okay. Well, I guess, hopefully Joe, we'll call back. Next up, we have Kathy from Iowa, spoke to her great aunt's spirit. Kathy, you are on with Jim and Bree.
Hi, Jim. Hi, Bree.
Hey, hello. Kathy.
No.
All right. You spoke to a spirit. Is that right?
Yes.
A spirit who you could, who was a familiar person that you could have, verified their identity. So yeah, go ahead and let us know kind of how that happened.
Okay. Well, apparently when I was little, we took a vacation to visit my aunt in Mexico, I believe. And while I was there, and I believe when they were in the kitchen preparing the food, I was talking to myself, is what they thought. But I was talking with my aunt, like my great aunt, which.
So is this something you were told that happened, or something that you remember that happened? Because you said they thought you were talking, like, is this an actual memory that you have?
Well, no, I have like short-term memory because of an accident that happened, but
sorry,
that is what
that.
My mother tells me.
So your mother advised you that you were, that when you were a child, that you were in the other room, they heard you talking to someone, and you claimed that it was that you were actually speaking with a dead relative that wasn't present.
Well,
your aunt, yeah.
Actually, while I was talking, and then I told my aunt that she told me to tell her that she is okay.
Hmm.
And to not be sad anymore because she is gone. However, I have never met my great aunt, nor would I know her name. And I did on that day.
Did you know that your mother was sad from losing your great aunt? I mean,
No. They never talked about my great aunt. I never got to meet her. And yet I was talking to her when she died a few months before.
How did they confirm that it was her? Sorry.
Because I said her name.
Okay.
And I've never known her name.
Oh, so it was either her or somebody who was familiar with her. I guess that could be the case too. So we're right following this so far, based on that yes, okay, the notion that yes, as a child, that you said you were speaking to this individual, and you never knew that person's name, but you spoke that person's name. Okay. Just making sure I had all this lined out. So was there any information given or just the name and then the message? Nothing to verify?
Well, all my mom remembers is that I told the name that is her name, and my aunt even confirmed that it was her aunt, that I was talking about my great aunt.
Okay.
How did your family know that your great aunt had died a few months before?
Because that was my great aunt. My aunt
right, but,
and her were very close.
Okay. So, but you never heard her name? Sorry, Jim.
Yes, yeah. I knew her name.
So if your aunt and your mother were very close, then how do you know you've never heard your mother before this talk to your...
No, you got that confused. My aunt was very close to her aunt, my great aunt. Okay. Not my mom.
Okay. So, but somebody had to call your mom and tell your mom that your great aunt had died. How do you know you weren't close enough to overhear that conversation without remembering it?
Because I don't listen to my mom's conversation. And she always has her conversations in her room.
Right. But you can still overhear things even though you're not paying attention to it. And kids are incredibly intuitive as to people's emotional state in many cases. So I don't see how it's that great a leap to go to, for a child to put together some clues like that and come to a conclusion. It's not out of that realm of possibility. So I don't know how you eliminated it.
We have to also take into contingency that
I'm not saying I eliminate it, but I'm telling you what I know.
That we do need to keep in mind that you had mentioned that you had some memory loss at the time. So you remember that you didn't know your aunt's name or your great aunt's name, but you don't remember that you you had the conversation with her and spoke her name.
My mother told me that story. I'm telling it to you guys.
Okay.
Right. And I mean, I'm just trying to apply a skeptical lens to it by asking you questions about, you know, how were the facts of the story ascertained and what happened. I would not consider it unusual at all for a child to overhear things on occasion, and be able to put together moods and things like that. Was your aunt's name very unusual, or was it a fairly common first name?
I'm guessing it's common, but I don't hear it very often.
Okay. So you kind of see where I'm going, where we have a bunch of events, and then we can put a narrative together from those events that could sound very supernatural, that don't necessarily have to be supernatural, right?
Yeah, I'm with you there, Jim. And having these events happen that we're not able to remember from our childhood. I don't remember whose name from my childhood that I knew as far as my relatives. Maybe you do. Maybe it's I'm the minority there of not remembering, you know, which aunt, great aunts and uncles' names that I knew. But a story like that could definitely imprint the name on my mind. If my parent had told me, you know, Aunt Rose, you talked to her ghost at her house, then Aunt Rose is going to stick with me from there on. But I wouldn't know if I had known her name before that or not. Now, if you follow me, did we lose?
No.
You still with us, Kathy?
Yeah.
Okay. We're just trying to we're applying kind of a skeptical lens to your report. So just trying to.
I get what you're saying, but that's not going to change what happened.
Oh.
Right. We're probably not going to change your interpretation of what happened. But we have also been assuming that your mother's recounting of events is actually correct. And we know enough about human memory to know just how fallible and frail it really is. And so, you know, not only could you not be, I mean, if you don't have any recollection of it, your mom could not be remembering it quite correctly either. And that would not be because she's lying or anything else. It's just, you know, human memory at work. Being its fallible self. Yeah. We're not, you know, video devices, or audio recording devices. our brains are really, really good at filling in details that it thinks will fit in there. And this is why eyewitness testimony is considered some of the worst evidence there is. Yeah. Is for all of these things. So it doesn't take a lot to start asking, you know, some pretty serious questions about what's going on with a story like this, that, you know, the supernatural is not the first thing that I'm going to jump to. But in this story, there's enough if coming off of it, and that I'm just not convinced that there's a supernatural element at all.
I do find it interesting. I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear that. What was that?
Well, I said I'm not trying to convince any of you. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to tell my story.
Yeah, we absolutely appreciate that, that's what we're here for. We couldn't do this show without you calling in with your with your account. But yeah, it's our job to fine tooth comb it and try to see if there's any plausible natural explanation for it. And I think that Jim's appealing to the fallibility of human memory is very apt here, because our memories are just reconstructions in our brains of events that happened in the past. They're not recordings like you had mentioned. So it is hard, and the further back something is, especially going back to childhood, the harder it is to kind of put those pieces together, even as a parent to your own child being having an experience that you're trying to recall.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, but even if there is evidence, like just a video of that, you would just think that the kid's not talking to a spirit, he's just playing with their imaginary friend.
Mm-hmm.
It's always
there's
it's not spiritual.
There's a really good reason for that. There's a really good reason for that, and that is for the last 1,000 years, the supernatural as an explanation for anything has gotten so small as to be almost laughable at this point. Whereas natural explanations for everything have increased year over year. Every year, we increase our understanding of the natural world. And so the supernatural world at one time was responsible for every storm, every plague, every cold, every disease that walked the earth. And now we know that all those things have natural causes and can be cured or mitigated through natural means or through modern science. So the reason why we become more and more skeptical of even video evidence is because we have this long history of the supernatural as an explanation for anything failing every single time. And so the supernatural's explanation gets smaller and smaller. You can call it the supernatural of the gaps, or God of the gaps, whichever you want. But that gap gets smaller and smaller every year. And so, we're going to be more skeptical of supernatural claims the more often they fail.
All right. Well, Kathy, we appreciate your call today. And I'm glad you were able to give us your story and tell us your kind of your perspective on it. And I'm glad you took the time to listen to our perspective as well. If you had any final words to say, we're probably going to pop into the next call.
Okay, now I'm good. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Yep, you are very welcome. And I just want to say thank you to Secular Rarity for the $20 super chat. Jim, Bree, and Ethan always crushing it. I think we're having some good fun calls tonight. What do you think, Jim?
Yeah, definitely.
I liked what you said about the gap getting smaller about the memory thing. Did you know that we now have the ability to project our memories and thoughts into a computer and build an image based on that? It's amazing technology.
No, I hadn't heard that. Hadn't heard that. And that brings up some really, really interesting thing, some really interesting ethical questions too. So
it really does. Well, next up we have Isaiah. Isaiah is a regular caller on the show, and Isaiah wants to provide evidence and rationale for a deistic God. Isaiah, are you with us?
Hello, Bree. Yes, I am back. Good to be here.
Yeah, good to talk to you again.
And how's the gym?
I'm doing okay. Just wish my my laptop actually. I thought I lost internet, but actually, my laptop was not plugged into the backup battery. I thought it was, so it died. So I'm on my phone. So if it looks a little jittery, that's why.
Yeah. We're just happy to have you here, Jim.
So hey, anyway, Bree. So Bree, you were just talking about being able to record our thoughts and images and things like that on computer. I think it's the same technology. We can do it with dreams now. You can record what you see in your dream and kind of
I've been watch a
fuzzy
that.
Version of it.
Have you seen the progression of how clear, how much clearer they're getting over time? It reminds me very much of how ultrasounds used to look compared to how they look now, comparing the visual progress. So imagine how acutely we are going to be able to view our memories and thoughts and dreams. It's going to be amazing.
That is freaking amazing. Like, they can decode what the signals our visual cortex is that we interpret as an image, and the computer, whatever, I'm sure they've had to do a lot of machine learning, but yeah, to be able to render that as an image on a screen and basically decode what our visual cortex is doing. That is astounding science.
Really is.
So, So, what I wanted to talk about was rationale and possible evidence for a deistic God.
Which one?
So where I like to go with this, where I like to go with this is like back to even before the beginning, the idea of causality, of a universe, of like stuff being created or not created. I lean more towards stuff isn't created or destroyed, it simply changes form. So
that's consistent with science.
Dynamics. Well, I'm sorry, what was that?
I said that's consistent with science. Energy can neither be created nor destroyed.
Yes, yeah.
Freud?
Yeah.
Yeah, form of energy, that fits.
Okay, so, and the one of the main stories of understanding, the scientific narrative we've compiled over time, is the Big Bang, there, which is an expansion of space-time out of a hot, dense, kind of unified state. And from my understanding of it, doesn't say that that hot, dense state appeared out of nowhere. We just know for somehow, whatever reason, it rapidly expanded into this big void space universe we have today. So, where I like to go with that is we often describe that singularity as infinitesimally small, right? And we're shown it's in this big black empty space. But that space does not exist according to the logic of it. The only thing that exists, that singularity, contains all space, time, matter, energy in this hyperdense state. Well, The only valid point of perspective is from the inside of that singularity. And from there, it effectively has no external border. In other words, it's not this finite, infinitesimally small thing from an external perspective that doesn't exist. It's actually, effectively infinitely large. It has no external border, and it is this ultimately hyperdense state. Does that make sense so far?
I'm following you. I don't know. I could nitpick, but I'm actually pretty well on board with everything you said so far.
Okay. How this dovetails into a deistic idea of a God is that of an infinite absolute that is the source of all things. So this God doesn't just like think willy-nilly creation into being. In fact, from an infinite absolute state, the only thing it can do is make voided space available for little pieces of itself, of stuff, to move around in that space, and so that we experience time and change and stuff like that over time. So, well,
okay, what's going to happen when I grant all of this, but then say, why do we need to personify it into being an entity, a thinking entity?
I think that comes later with our interaction with it, but I'm not there yet.
Okay.
Even at the level of a purely mechanistic, pure physics, this infinite absolute state, gosh, it's hard to do. So I'm going to use theistic language. It self-expresses. In other words, it self-quantizes. It makes order using its own infinite nature. In other words, this thing doesn't just make one universe. It, as an infinite, its singular self-expression as an infinite one are infinite ones. So in this model, that's going to come out with that we can check against the universe.
How would you go about disproving any of this?
That's a great question, because we don't have scientific information outside of our sphere of observability, but we do have some information on its expansive quality. And that's where I'm going to land, where this dovetails in with science we can actually, with data we can detect.
You're talking about like redshift, right?
Well, so my problem is that if you can't falsify it and you can't think of a way to do it, whether or not we have the technology to do it is completely a different question. But if you can't figure out a way to falsify it, then basically you're making a series of unfalsifiable propositions, right?
Yes. Yeah, I don't necessarily lean towards that. Unfalsifiability is like the gold standard. I like
well, to explain you're standing against philosophers and scientists on that one. So I'm going to stand on that one.
Totally.
Like I said,
it's a major pillar
of a way
and provability.
Yeah. All it takes is one attempt to falsify it, and if that attempt succeeds at falsifying what your claim is, then your claim is in fact false. So it's not just provability. If I want to prove that Santa Claus exists, I could do that fairly easily. But all I really need to do is put cameras up on cookies, you know, outside a fireplace, and when Santa Claus delivers the presents and there's no Santa Claus, then we falsified the Santa Claus claim, right?
Right.
So, but I mean, proving's very, well, very easy to do if you're will. If so, it's the falsifiability that is important.
Visiting all these. Yeah, but I mean, if Santa Claus is visiting all these houses at a single night, he's obviously moving faster than the speed of light. So, how are we going to get a photo of him?
Is he?
I'm just kidding. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
real quick.
So again.
I don't know.
You don't have any way to disprove your claim.
I'll think on that.
I think that would be a good way to understanding what your claims are. All right. And then
let's take turns, fellas. Y'all are both. Every time you're both trying to talk at the same time. So Jim, go.
Okay, and then how are you dealing with what the apparent emergent property that we call cause and effect? That at the quantum level, cause and effect don't seem to necessarily follow each other. And I'm thinking particularly the light experiments where they shoot a photon of light down a tunnel, and then the light can go down the left or right tunnel. After the light makes the choice, so to speak, of what tunnel it goes, they close the other one 100% of the time. That photon of light is going down the open tunnel. There's some other experiments that go along those same lines. Yeah, but you know, cause and effect appear to be an emergent property, given our current understanding of quantum physics. So, how do you get cause and effect in a world where that may be an emergent property and not necessarily fundamental?
Well, I would say it's a scalar phenomenon. We experience that at our scale of size and relationship to everything else around us, and it's different at different scales. The scale I'm talking about of a regular multiverse, and it's non-random, that each universe is a time space, that time actually has a shape, and you get out far enough and you're outside of its domain,
okay,
if you will. So
again, I gotta go. Nice claim, got evidence.
Here it goes. A non-random multiverse. Each universe is spherical. They take up the same amount of space in a maximum density absolute, creating a maximum density sphere stack. Each of those spheres take up about 74.04% or 5% of the total space. So that is the expansive constant on every single one of those universes equally.
I hear more claims that need more evidence. All I'm hearing is more claims that need more evidence.
Yes. What is the measurement of the expansive constant of our universe that we have measured? Our first measurements were 74%. So I'm saying this one simple, non-random, no special pleating model, it is almost exactly on what we are finding as our expansive constant in this universe.
How do you take anything that's happening in this universe and say it's happening in any other universe if there are, I mean, how do you even know there's more than just this universe? We don't, right? We just don't have any way to figure that out at the moment.
Well, mathematics leads to it. Mathematics way more advanced than I can follow leads to it. And people who are far greater experts in that are saying, Lawrence.
It's all hypothetical.
They make a hypothesis of it. It's all hypothetical. It's not settled.
Right.
There's a few different models for cosmology.
And cosmologists ridicule it as much as they support it.
What is the importance?
No, I said some of the cosmologists ridicule it as much as they support it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's all hypothetical. Yeah, it hasn't risen to the level of theory yet.
But how does the multiverse get us to a deistic God? So let's say me and Jimbo said, okay, the multiverse seems like a plausible explanation. So taking it from there to a deistic God, let's hear that argument or evidence.
Okay, well, it would be that what theology would call creation, all these universes I call formation. It is formed naturally out of this absolute unfolding itself, like light being bent apart. You get the same colors each time, no matter where you bend that light apart. Similarly with the multiverse, when you bend this absolute state apart, you get the same order each time in each universe. There's zero randomness. So if you take the simplest possible hypothesis, which is what I'm trying to go on, there's no variation between these universes, then the evidence points to a regularity that, I mean, and even science itself is based on regularity of laws we run into at our scale of it. And obviously, down at very small and very large scales. But as far as bringing it back to the deity, looking for the signature of this infinite source, where would you look for that signature? And it would be at the end of the finite, which would be our largest possible scale and our smallest possible scale. And that's where I look for that evidence.
And what evidence do we find?
Okay. Order. Again, the larger theory, which I won't get into, points to specific shaping fields that govern the order of the entire universe. Our section of the universe is toroidal.
So, is your claim that order equals intelligence? I can drop a handful of marbles and they're all going to go to the lowest point, and that's not going to be intelligence causing that. It's going to be natural forces. So,
yeah. This way of understanding, or what I'm trying to convey, is it's not an intelligent design, that's biological design. And again, I have to use theological language to express this poetically, but that God self-expressed, said, "I exist." Or I am. It said its own name, as in I That single expression was the symmetry break. That self-reflection is what caused and continues to cause the continual arising of the metaverse, of this multiverse that is a regular phenomenon. I see it as a wavefront, as in each quantum moment, there's another layer of infinite universes adding to the bottom of the stack. Like it was a wave that got shot off, and behind that wave are cavitated bubbles. And that's what we exist in, and that's what we each are, as a individuated self-expression of this original self-aware being. So
how does this original self-aware being exist? How does he exist?
That's a great question. We get back to that things are not created nor destroyed, but have always been. But simply changes form, and so, this would be the formless state.
But I was just going to say those are laws within. Those are laws that apply within our universe, but to make assessments or assumptions about the way that they apply outside—that's like that's my big problem with causality. And I'm glad that you kind of cut that out of this whole discussion, because causality bugs the heck out of me, because. Eventually you're going to have to get to an uncaused cause, and then you have to justify why that cause is uncaused, and there's you can't do that without special pleading. So thank you for avoiding that.
Well, that goes back to what I talked about in the beginning, was that there's nothing that gets created nor destroyed. It simply changes form, and a universe is like an expanded state of the closed form that would be the deity, the source that it is all from.
Right. And I wouldn't even say that rises to the level of hypothesis, right? That's just, you're at this moment purely speculating to get you to a deistic God. And then since you use the I am, I'm going to assume then you're going to try to figure out a way to shoehorn in the Christian God or some version of the God of the Bible. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that no. There's a whole lot of claim coming off that.
Oh God, you're is. No, I don't try to shoehorn the modern kind of churchianity interpretation of the personality of God in the Bible. I view the Bible as very much as a multi-layered conglomerate rock of efforts over time, and stuff has been added, stuff has been taken away. It's not a single thing. And yeah, I find more explanatory power actually in the creation story from Egypt. They have a similar type story. First, there was just this endless abyss of water. They describe the formless state as like water, because that's the closest thing humans have. That's the closest analogous thing we have to a formless infinite is the ocean. And we can't breathe in it, so air must be made, or space must be made in the ocean. The water must be parted for anything to exist, kind of, again, with the poetic inflections of it.
But so, when you get into applying poetics... When you get into applying the poetic aspect, that's where it gets kind of tricky too, because you don't know how are we deciding which parts are poetic and if it's metaphoric, what is a metaphor for? There's a lot of inference that we have to make from there to get to.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
I have one that I bet you two can both make really easily. So just say the universe is a torus. Okay, it's a donut shape. And it's in motion. There's a wavefront traveling along the surface of the ring. It's an echo of the Big Bang. How would you describe that to a primitive person or someone who's only has the natural world around them? How would you describe that shape and motion?
Like a wheel?
That's perfect. Very much so, like a wheel.
I'm trying to figure out why I would try to describe it to somebody who's too primitive to actually understand it, knowing full well that the best possible metaphors I could come up with, somebody who is still pre-Bronze Age in this case, that kind of is mind-boggling. I don't know why I would want to try and explain it to somebody who's that primitive. I think there are many better things I would be trying to explain.
Well, this is more so like tactics taken by older empires at their height, and they realize they're going to fall, and they have amassed some workable knowledge and or have just carried on the tradition that they were started in. And so in realizing we've overshot.
Yeah. What human empire has known it was going to fall
over time?
What human empire has been self-aware enough to know that it would fall?
I think most of them, like most of our recent ones, Rome, people are calling the current fall of our civilization. We're hyper aware of that. I think human tendencies for overconsumption and crash has been long known for a long time, and we've watched it happen repeatedly.
Based on and so the process again, of the
world I are just warning.
I'm back to my old cliche of nice claims, got evidence for any of this. We're wandering pretty far afield. You still haven't gotten us to anywhere near that I can think of a deistic God in terms of evidence. We've got you made a whole bunch of claims and then stuck a deistic entity on the end of it and with no real explanation of how you get there or anything else that could actually be falsified. I'm just, you know, I'm kind of baffled at where the evidence is for anything that you've claimed so far on this call.
Well, and okay. I would say that you brought us to saying that order is evidence of intelligence. I'm still not convinced on that.
I can disprove.
It's more fundamental.
You can look at Sierpinski curves, not the ones where they draw it from a single line, but one where they randomly generate it. And there is order out of chaos because rolling dice is fairly chaotic. And you get order out of it with one simple rule. And I can do the same thing with tree building algorithms and things like that are, 99% random and 1% rule. So order and chaos is something that
emergence out of aggregate.
Pardon?
Yeah. You get emergence out of aggregate and interactions of that aggregate?
Yeah. So, order does not necessarily indicate a mind.
That wasn't what I was saying. I was saying it's more fundamental, this way of understanding. It's much more akin to biological. In other words, we don't intelligently design, a mother does not intelligently design the child they're carrying. It's a biological reproduction after their own kind. It's like aside from keeping her own body, their own body, healthy, our DNA does the rest for the most part. And so that similarly, this is much more so of a reproductive event. It's not like a big super brain intelligent scientist male god just mind farted out the creation all at once. It was a reproductive event of other self-aware embryos, if you will. You could consider each universe that, and we are each one of those universes.
Oh, wow.
This dovetails all the way back around.
I'm looking for more evidence. I mean, you just keep stacking claims on and stacking claims on like you're chopping wood for the winter and not providing any real evidence.
There's a lot to unload here. So
there'd be a lot of pictures to show you.
Don't have
I don't have that capability right now. But thank you for the challenge and the questions. It's great exercise. I really appreciate this.
Yeah. Well, hopefully come up with some way to falsify it also that you can know whether or not you're trying to prove Santa Claus exists or actually onto something. And if you are onto something, remember us in your Nobel speech.
Yeah, remember this conversation. This is what I'm trying to do.
I certainly will. No, I greatly appreciate this. You guys show me where you guys are strong, where my arguments are weak, and it's always a learning experience. Thank you so much.
All right, Isaiah. Good talking to you.
You too. Aloha, gentlemen.
Aloha. All right, we do have some more love from our live chat over there on YouTube, sending us some super chats from Martin. We got much love to Bree, Jim, and Ethan, and the extended family YFNA. And Amit Matthews, another familiar face that I always see out there supporting our work here. Always love listening to Jim and Bree dissect claims. We love dissecting claims, so I'm glad you like it.
Absolutely.
And we got a super sticker from Secular Pagan Mom. Secular Pagan Mom, thank you so much for that. Super chat for No Tangelo and the Tangelogical argument. Yeah. Thanks, left, right.
Yeah.
We have Otangelo out there in the live chat too, if you're interested, Jim.
Oh no, I he and I have had a long conversation in email, and I am quite done with a presuppositional intelligent design argument. Just they make no sense, and they're he tries to sneak in the intelligent design and the irreducible complexity BS all the time, and it just doesn't work. Everything is reduced. All if it's complex, you can always reduce it to something simpler. So right. Yeah, I have no interest in talking to Otangelo again.
Well, we have one more call, and they've been waiting for this whole time. We have Cassidy from Colorado with proof of aliens, which I am ready for some proof of aliens at this point. So hopefully Cassidy has it for us.
Proof would be good.
Hello, Cassidy. You're on with Jim and Bree. What's your alien proof today? Hey.
Just quick correction. I don't have proof that aliens exist. That was the subject that we wanted that Ethan wanted to talk about. And I believe it's because last time I was on, we were talking about that, and I made an absolute ass of myself. So I think that's what's going on. So can you guys hear me?
Yep, we can hear you. Oh, yeah. And I'm okay. I made an ass of myself on the show a dozen times.
My headset went dead for a second. Okay, so where to begin? More or less, I'm a member of a race that's trying to make contact with humans, and quite frankly, part of my mission and the mission of others is to find and provide the proof, because it's all part of the contact process. Now, I believe that people should believe in aliens, quite simply because there's enough evidence around the world that people should at least look into it. You know, my favorite catchphrase on my show is "more science needed." So, but I don't think people like should believe in anything.
Let me back up and make sure I understand what you said. You surmised that if you were a member of a contact team from an alien race, that you wouldn't know how to make contact with the human race. Why not just show up in Times Square or Moscow or the UN buildings? I mean, that seems to be like a fairly simple thing to do to make contact with the human race. So I think I misheard something you said there.
Well, quite frankly, we did try that. It did not go well. There's certain other scientific phenomena that are involved there, involving
are you saying you are a member of an alien race trying to make contact with humans?
Yes.
I thought that was a hypothetical.
And that's the...
What race is that? He thought you were hypothetical. I thought you were being hypothetical too, but...
Oh, no. No. So you're not human. I have my evidence and my proof.
You're not human.
I am not. Not genetically and not medically.
Why is it the easiest thing to do to walk into Bethesda? Walk into Bethesda and have them do DNA tests on you or do x-rays. I mean, this isn't hard to do.
That would be kind of what I'm trying to talk about is the DNA testing and that's actually going on right now. We're getting, last time I was on, they said, well, is there any kind of paperwork you could get? And we cleared it with the doctors and they're going to go ahead and release our genetic profiles.
When?
Basically what's happening here with Char is my daughter, my half human daughter. Yeah.
When and who? Who's going to do the release and when? Date and time. And who?
I was just explaining that. We're talking about my daughter. Okay. Now, this all got sort of brought to the forefront when they needed to test my daughter's DNA to find out what's wrong with her heart. So, date and time, I can't give you date and time. We're working on it. I've released some of the paperwork that we have to the channel already, and we're getting more. It all boils down to...
You're releasing evidence that you...
Go ahead.
So, you're releasing...
I don't interrupt. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's a bit of a delay, and I know I'm breaking up a little bit as well. So you're releasing evidence you claim is real on your YouTube channel. Is that correct?
Not on my YouTube channel. I'm going to be giving it to the various people that have asked for it. Like, for example, you guys on The Perspective have asked for the information. Cameron Logan from My Alien Life has asked for the information. You know, a number of organizations that will all want this paperwork. And so
why are
like
you
I said,
releasing it and not
part of the contact
not,
process?
Why isn't Mayo Clinic releasing this? Why are you releasing this information and not a reputable organization like Mayo Clinic, Bethesda?
Why didn't they react? The doctors
are the ones releasing it. I told you, they're the ones releasing it.
Which doctors?
I can't release something that's not mine. You see what I mean?
Which doctors?
So, you know, I'm not really sure I can say his name out loud. We call him Dr.
Okay,
A.
Okay, doctor.
You can look. Her name is Shard. Okay, hold on. I'm going to give you some information so you can look it all up for yourself because you don't believe me, and that is absolutely fine. Her name is Charlene Dunning. She is a patient at the Denver or Colorado. Sorry, I'm really bad with words. The Children's Hospital in Colorado in the cardiac wing. Everyone who wants to could look all this information up. Okay.
So why is a children's hospital releasing this instead of, like I said, I mean, Johns Hopkins, Bethesda, there are
sir, I just said they're the ones releasing it.
How different is
I literally just said that.
How different is the DNA? Because you think that we'd be seeing headlines if the DNA was significantly different. Is it?
The thing is, you have been seeing headlines. It's just that it's not exactly, it's kind of buried. Like, for example, the DNA testing came back on this old Pharaoh Akhenaten. Basically, it's the same, similar genetic codes. And again, this is being released by the medical people, not by me. All right? We had to sign the papers because she's our daughter. But they're the ones releasing it, not me.
So if your DNA is not human, how did you end up with a daughter? Because to me, it's kind of like you're saying that a tiger mated with a human. We've got a higer or a tumen hanging around now. That doesn't make any sense because your DNA profile should be so different that it's not possible.
Hybridization, would be unviable.
Well, ask yourself this question, the Drake equation, right? Really? In a number that large, how unrealistic is it really that two species can be, you know, close enough to be genetically compatible? It's not that far-fetched.
We have to have a common ancestor. Does your species have a common ancestor with our species?
Yes, we do, actually. Yes, we do. That's part of the reason why we're brothers.
Okay, so when did we diverge from one another? Biologically speaking, when was it, and maybe you don't know, but how long ago was our last common ancestor?
Near as I can tell, our last common ancestor was Australopithecus. We diverged at some point after that.
After Australopithecus.
Okay. How did you get off the planet?
Mm-hmm.
If you're not an alien, right?
No, sir.
Branch of humanity.
I'm not an alien.
Humanity,
no. I was born in Denver, Colorado, in 1978, sir. I'm not an alien. I have no spaceship. I didn't come out of the stars or anything like that.
I have no idea where this conversation's going.
Okay. Well, I'm trying to tell you.
So give me a second.
Now, I'm sure you guys
are looking for proof of aliens.
I don't have proof of aliens. That's what I've been trying to say. Shit. Okay, so I'm sure you guys are aware of the various indigenous cultures that claim to have, you know, like star people lineage, all that crap, right?
Yeah.
Well, right. That's the line I'm talking about. I'm not saying we're aliens, okay? I'm saying that our people diverged from each other a long, long, long time ago. You know.
So, okay.
That's
like an Atlantean
so this is all
race.
Part of the contact. Pro-
Like something like an Atlantean race that's superior to the human race, an advanced, not advanced alien race, an advanced race of Homo that preceded humanity, that preceded our species. Is that what the claim is?
I wouldn't say we preceded. I'd say we were around about the same time. You know, there's lots of legends and stories about how this happened. I'm really not interested in any of that. I'm interested in getting the genetic proof and finding out what that means for basically. I'm selfish here, but for my own family. So
right. So some of the biological differences between your species and ours? Are there anything that you could demonstrate?
Oh yeah, I have five sinus chambers on each side, more than your species. My people have been clocked by your medical doctors as healing roughly 25 times faster than your species, which, by the way, is not the fastest. There are some humans that have the right combination of hormones that heal faster than us. I'm not talking like superhero, okay? I'm talking like, we just heal faster, things like that. I can't eat the same foods that you guys eat. Like a lot of the foods that humans eat is just nightmarish on my digestive system. My system just simply doesn't make the right enzymes. I'm pretty much forced on a diet of more or less meat. I can't even handle most spices. Another example is, for example, the oxygen content I need baffled the doctors at first, because basically I require more hydrogen. They couldn't figure it out. Like I said, under the surface, the differences are very, very obvious.
Yeah, you're making a bunch of claims. You need more hydrogen. How do you get more hydrogen? Do you bring around a breathing apparatus with you? How does that work?
No, I'm just sick all the time. I can't get enough air. So
how do you evolve the need for more hydrogen when there's not more hydrogen in the atmosphere for the period of time you're evolving?
Pretty much, yeah. That goes into the creation.
How, right? How does that happen? How do you evolve needing something that isn't present in the atmosphere?
Honestly, I wish I knew. That's part of why we need more science,
But species that are indigenous to a region generally are evolved to thrive in that environment. So are you claiming the species that they evolved maybe underground caverns that have high hydrogen? I mean, there has to be some kind of environment where this would have evolved.
Yeah, because you don't fit into this environment very well. And so survival of the fittest seems to have taken a giant left turn.
Indeed. Indeed. Now, the planet we're from had a higher hydrogen atmosphere. That's just simple as that. Easy explanation.
So I asked, how did you get off the planet? And then you very specifically said you were born here and you don't have a spaceship. So where did this other planet come from? Right, you're spinning around like crazy here now.
I'm not spinning. I'm just trying to answer your guys' questions as they come up. Okay, so essentially my people's technology is not based on molecular physics, as you guys know it. It's based off of radiation physics consciousness. When a species achieves a level of sapience, they begin to start producing a different brainwave, which your own scientist could tell you that. The brainwaves put out by a sapient individual are not the same as the brainwaves put out by an animal.
You're doing the same thing that the last guy did. You're just piling claim on top of claim on top of claim with absolutely no evidence for any of it. No way to disprove any of it. It's just ridiculous. I mean,
actually, you could disprove it pretty easily if you tried, if you wanted to. That's the thing. You're not. You're just assuming.
Here's what I can tell you.
Cool, bro.
If I was in your position, I'd walk into Johns Hopkins, UCLA Medical Center, Bethesda, any of those places, and make my claim and have them do the DNA and run those tests in the public eye. The fact that you haven't done that.
How do you
tells
think
me
my daughter's getting the help she needs, bro?
See,
what you're describing is what you would do is exactly what I did.
Yeah, sure. I'm sure you did. Absolutely 100% positive. You did. I'm just not 100% positive.
Nah, you're being sarcastic, bro. I can tell. It's all right. I know it
sounds crazy. Why your daughter and not yourself, though? I understand your daughter has medical condition, but as far as putting something out there and saying, yes, we're not humans, we're this alternative species that looks exactly like humans,
I've been doing that since around 2016. My daughter developed a condition due to the stress of the life we were under, essentially adrenaline poisoning, and that causes growth deformations in the heart. And before they figured out that it was adrenaline poisoning, they needed to go through and they were trying to do anything they could to find out exactly why she was doing this. So I said, all right, look at my medical records and you'll see. And they did. And so they took her DNA and they tested it and they found out she has the same quote unquote mutation that I do. And so here we are. Yeah.
So wait, okay. So it's a mutation that's different. Oh. I gotcha. Okay.
It's classified as a mutation, and that's rational.
Yeah,
the part that I can't prove. Hold on, please. Okay, you're trying to make it sound like I'm trying to make these wild claims. I'm not. Okay, the part that I can't prove is the stuff in my head. All right, the memories of another world, all that stuff. That I'm going to tell you completely honest. I thought it was all just hyper imagination. Okay. So I wrote it into sci-fi books and great. Awesome. But now here we are. So, you know, even I thought it was
also like Escape from Witch Mountain.
Hence why I require more science.
Right.
You know?
So, yeah. Sounds like you watched Escape from Witch Mountain one too many times, or maybe read the books one too many times.
I've actually never seen it or read the book.
Right.
But that the way that would, I've seen the remake, and that would involve spaceships and such, and that's not any of this at all. This is essentially a continuing scientific research.
How do you not have
spaceships
and come from another planet at the same time? How do you not have spaceships and come from another planet at the same time?
Again, our technology is not based on molecular physics. Or I'm crazy. That's okay too.
That's a really convenient excuse.
All right. I think that we're probably going to wrap this up.
It's not a convenient excuse. Look, I've been passing the technology on to humans. Humans have been learning it. You know, it's one of those things.
Which ones?
What I've been proving
department?
It for 35 years.
Okay. I am sure that Caltech now, or Berkeley or MIT will be releasing all of the stuff you release to them here soon from the physics folks. So
That's the idea, yeah.
Okay, guys. Yeah. I think we're pretty much out of time at this point. I really do appreciate your call in today, Cassidy. Very very interesting stuff, and we look forward to talking to you again in the future. We'll give you the final. Well, Jim, you got anything to say?
No.
Okay. All right, Cassidy, you want to have the final word, and then we gotta finish up here.
All I got to say is I know how crazy it sounds, but I invite anyone who wishes to go back and look at my blogs and whatnot, where I've predicted pretty much all of this down to mostly the minute, including things like the malleability of human DNA and advanced physics. So basically, it's up to you guys. Am I telling the truth about where this all comes from, or, you know, am I getting it from somewhere else? And if so, where am I getting it?
Okay.
That's all.
All right. Thank you, Cassidy. You have a pleasant remainder of your evening.
You too.
All right. Well, thanks, Cassidy. Bree, Jim, do you guys have fun?
Oh, yeah.
I had fun watching. And Jim was cracking me up here. It kept coming back to, that's a nice claim. Where's the evidence? It's like...
I forgot to ask you guys prior to the show, but are you able to join the Discord after show for 10 minutes?
Yeah, I can.
Sweet.
Yeah.
For those that don't know, after the perspective, we go on to Discord and we have like a 10 to 15 minute open chat where you can ask the host questions. And I'd also like to thank our top tier patrons. Give me one second. I should have had that ready. Cindy Plaza, Left, Right, Left, Kenneth Leonard, Sky, Jump and Shoot, Oz, Secular Rarity, Philip Leach, Caitlin Beyond, Toast, Richard Gilliver, Sunset, Sarge, excuse me, Amit Matthew, Ray Sylvester, and Kyle Brewer. Thank you for your pick. Jim, what do you got going on?
Not much. I'm going to be doing AXP towards the end of September, I think, or the first part of October. I forget which. I'm also doing AXP's Halloween show. I believe it is Shannon Q and myself, but don't quote me on that. I'm fairly confident I am. Schedules are still being made, so we'll see what's going on with that. And that's all I think that I've got coming up right now.
Oh, great. And Bree, what about you?
Well, I will have my regular stream this Saturday, and I am going to be looking at, Stellar Sea Ape. We're going to be looking at some giant scorpions, and we're going to be talking about man-eating ants. All those things are coming up this Saturday on Live from the Hive at 9:30 a.m. Saturday Central Standard Time.
Awesome. For those that don't know, the perspective is highly dependent on callers. So to the people watching, if you know people who have a conspiracy theory, they believe a, you know, far right or far left political claim, paranormal, supernatural, any claims you'd like to see challenged, please have them call the show. It's every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Central. We could definitely use the callers. So anyone watching, we appreciate your support, your patronage, and send us your friends, family, and anyone else you'd like to have us talk to. Bree, Jim, thank you so much. We will see everyone in the Discord after show. And then, Thursday, we'll be back for the pickup line. We'll be doing kink tests live. That's at 9. Good night, everyone. Oh, night. And also, I can't announce this yet. So I'll just say good night, everyone.